welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Our guest today is Dr. Danny Rittman, CTO of GBT Technologies. Danny has an extensive background in the R&D space and has been working for companies such as Intel, IBM, and Qualcomm. He has spent most of his career researching and inventing processor chips, as well as paving the way for futuristic AI software programs that can be successfully used in a vast number of industries. Welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me today.
First, can you tell us what brought you to the semiconductor industry?
Well, I actually started my career at the semiconductor industry in the early 90s, working for Intel Corporation. At the time, we made the first Intel's first RISC processor, at the time, the i960. It was very famous at the time, created the first, I would say, processing for high resolution graphics. Large team, vast amount of devices, very smart microprocessor, and later on. So, I moved on to other Intel's projects, if it's the Pentium Pro, later on with other CPUs of Intel. Later on, since I already started this domain, I naturally continued with other companies, among them are IBM, Qualcomm, and a few others. I would say I have probably more than 27 years experience in this domain. And I was involved with major integrated circuits in a few domains, not only the microprocessor, later in the AI, domain along the years.
Oh, great. So let's talk about today's chip design limitations. Can you share your thoughts?
Sure. The microchips of today, especially those that, going deep into the nanometer area, a few decades ago when we had the older generation of microchips, we had 350 nanometers. I would say the large scale one, I don't want to go too much technical. The large scale, had of course their own challenges, but they were not that difficult like today when it comes to the actual physics. Starting, I would say the 14 nanometer, 2014, 16, FinFET technology, microchips design, especially on the layout side, I'm not talking about the front end, which is the architecture and the actual functionality of the chip. I'm talking about the actual layout, the integrated circuit layout, which is how do we manufacture it, how are we etching it on the die, on the silicon wafer itself. Rule of physics kicked in. And then we got, a vast amount of challenges. All of a sudden there are all kind of constraints and considerations we have to look into, distances between metal lines, i.e. connectivity wires inside the chip, getting hot, currents distribution, power consumption and management, et cetera, et cetera. The challenges become much more advanced. And as we go deeper, of course, further into 7 nanometer, 5 nanometer, and even 3 nowadays, these challenges that are derived from the physics of the silicon, are becoming more and more advanced. So today, designing and manufacturing, starting probably at 10 nanometer, 7 and 5, for the design part, it become more challenges because design rules, which are basically the constraints or the fabrication process, what the fabrication process dictates, are become more challenging to actually address during the design. More design rules to comply with, if it's the actual distances between wiring, is the width of the wires, other constraints that basically comes from the manufacturing process, creating a vast amount of obstacles, which at the end of the day, translate into time to market factor. Means chips can take much longer to design, bigger teams, difficulties, delays, and missing schedules. And that's, by the way, that's where GBT comes. We actually take the approach into a software the solution here, and we built and design software that comes in the EDA domain, Standoff Electronic Design Automation, to basically overcome these challenges that are dictated by the process. But again, in short, the physics basically, as the chip manufacturing node gets smaller and smaller and scaling down, we have more challenges to do the design part and of course the manufacturing. But the manufacturing typically is taken care of by the fabrication plants. It's a major corporations deal with that, and they create a whole production line. On the design part, it's creating a whole bunch of headaches for these guys.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. FinFETs really brought that in, and now we're going to gate all around, which I think is going to be even more challenging. And I'm not sure if we've really addressed all those challenges yet. But what about alternative integrated circuit design that can surpass current capabilities?
Well, alternative designs, you know, if you want to, you know, especially in the semiconductor area and the high tech in general, you know, we have to keep up. It's a very competitive field. Everybody racing constantly forward, and those who make the new technologies, the new advancement, they will be in the, you know, on the top notch of the industry. So it's a constant running after schedules, after, you know, timelines. The company that will not make the chip faster, you know, with the biggest, you know, more capabilities, consuming less power and smaller size, then of course cheaper, eventually will stay behind and lose the market share, you know, eventually. So it's very competitive. Alternatives, there are not that many, especially, you know, if companies want to make chips, you know, the advantage of making them in smaller nodes and FinFET technology, and of course, gate-all-around after IBM started research on it and many others, is ultimately the cost. So you get cheaper microchips, consume less power, naturally we'll try to make them also smaller size so we consume less silicon and everything. And that's where we're heading. So, you know, there are industries that can still, they are still designing microchips in older technologies, in the older processes, but typically these are power chips, you know, automotive can still use you know, although even they go into this arena because again, eventually is cost and performance, and everybody wants, you know, fast systems. Everybody wants things to work fast, of course, in the wireless and cellular phones and microprocessor, GPU, CPU. These are obviously constantly in a race to get there, but there's not much alternative. You will have, as a company that move along with technology, you will have at some point to go into these smaller nodes, you know, 14, 10, 5, 7 for sure. If you want to, you know, stay competitive, make, you know, the chips affordable and perform, you know, in high performance for modern electronic systems.
Right. No, I agree. So you've been through this before a few times. Can you explain the road from invention to prototype to patent?
Yeah, well, typically, and again, GBT is a good example for that. You know, we consider ourselves an IP to start with, an IP corporation. We come up with an idea, which definitely, you know, we typically come with an idea that is related to our expertise, something that we can implement via a microchip or something we can implement via a system that we make or a system on chip, SoC. So the idea is, you know, for example, we came out with the devices in the medical field in the past few years. One of them is the Q-Tem is a good example. This one, you know, is an electronic system that actually connects via software that basically implement AI analytics, etc. So we come with the a concept that relates to our expertise. We are what we call protecting it, we are IPing it, we file patent or vast, you know, few patents, you know, in this domain. And after that, if we investigate into the R&D side of that concept, then if we feel that it's worth it, we typically design and build a prototype. And then we have a complete what we call IP package, which we have a patent, you know, a few of them. Usually we all typically, if the, for with example, with the Apollo system, we have initial non-provisional, then we file a continuation, another continuation, same with the microchip 3D, multi-planetary one. So we have a patent, we have a prototype, and we have the blueprints. So now we are ready to look for licensing this IP, this technology, but that's usually the flow that we follow. We get the idea, we patent it, and if we believe that a prototype is necessary, like in a few of the systems we do, that's what we do. We get the prototype, and then we have a package. Now we try to commercialize it. It's either we're licensing it, or if we actually looking into all kind of possibilities to do mass production and licenses to another company that will do it for us, that's the direction we take. One more word on this one: not with every IP we are capable of doing it. For example, our patent in the 3D multidimensional microchip is expensive to, of course, manufacture a microchip. So if it's very heavy financially to create a microchip and actually go to the process of fabrication it, then we're trying to look for partners, strategic partners in this domain that will be our partners to basically produce this IP.
Right. You mentioned the 3D. How will the invention of the 3D multiplanar chip change chip designs as we know it today?
Well, the microchip industry, I would say, for the past decades, basically still very traditional. We have the silicon wafer. Nothing changed conceptually. We still work on the silicon. We see a lot of researchers, MIT researchers discovered recently that actually another type of wafer material from the physics side can be better than silicon. There's lots of researchers and many, the big guys usually is IBM, is MIT, and Intel. Those usually, constantly in a search for new, replacement for the traditional silicon. But the fact is the silicon is and was for the past, five decades easy, the base for everything. But not only the silicon probably will remain for quite some time with us, but the actual traditional methodology of design and fabrication of the chip remain the same. We etch with layers on the silicon. In a way, it's very similar to the old type of photography that you basically develop from a film into a picture. We etching layers and we cover it again, the wafer would be some silicon type, and we etching it again, create more connectivity, and eventually we create a chip like that. But GPT came with a concept that is a breakthrough. It doesn't exist currently. It's actually take microchips into not just a 3D level, which the industry started to explore, I would say, about a decade ago. We take it to the next level, 3D and multi-planar approach. Here we said, okay, the 3D concept, which again, the industry started to evaluate about a decade ago, is very good. We build the chips as basically as towers, we're connecting them top-down, 3D shape, with like wires, vertical wires and horizontal. It's cool, all good, but it has its own limitations. It can be done to a certain extent. After that, there are, again, physics come and hit us, and we can't do it as we would like to do, to the extent that we like to do. So we came out with the idea of the multi-plane microchip. The multi-plane goes and say, okay, if you look, for example, at a structure of a beehive, it's a six planes. If we could put electronic circuitry, we take the typical silicon wafer and create it in this shape, or assemble it, or create it natively on the silicon, we could implement many more circuits on that surface. Ultimately, a big advantage of a microchip, that especially nowadays, is its real estate, its surface, how big I can make it. I don't want to make a chip in the size of a laptop. So especially with this multi-planetary approach, we came with an idea, with the concept, methodologies and systems, how to design and manufacture chips in this multi-planetary way. I'm talking about only a beehive, but think about a, you know, a structure that has 20 planes or 30 planes or 36, you know, the potential is enormous here. Of course, we will need the cooperation from the fabrication plants, you know, companies that do have, you know, like TSMC, UMC, Global Foundries. We have a few of them in the world that are leading Samsung in this area. And that's what we'll try to search. We'll try to search for partners to help us on the R&D from the manufacturing side and say, okay, you know, according to our research, you know, a cube shape is the best to implement, or maybe hexagon is the best to implement. But that's the concept we came up. We have one patent granted. We filed continuations, and we will continue probably file more, especially in dedicated domains. For example, memories is purely real estate on a die, on a chip. So as more surface I have for memories, I can put, instead of today, you know, a memory on stick has 256 gigabytes, I can put a few gigabytes on one or even more.
Right. So what are the applications for 3D chips in the different industries?
Well, we definitely see a great benefit in the memories. Just, I mean, memories is pure, you know, as bigger the chip and denser I can make it, then, hey, I can put more memory on it and everybody more happy. As I said, the best one is the, you know, the flash drives, those that we can buy today, and like I said, 256 gigabyte on them, and 512 and so more, and terabytes. But this is one good example that we can put many terabytes or even more than that, you know, on a small stick. Of course, it's even better when it comes to, you know, computers, laptops, desktops, GPUs, CPUs, and storage areas. Storage, data storage, is one of the biggest domain of today's tech world. And we believe that with this type of technology, data storage can be a huge market for our idea. That's one of them. It actually touches, beside the data storage, it actually touches any type of domain. I mean, if you talk about CPU, it needs to be stronger CPU, GPU the same. And another one is the wireless. I mean, look at your cellular phone. If I have the potential to put more circuitries on a chip of a cell phone, all of a sudden my phone can be, you know, with way more functionalities, consume less power, I have way more memory, you know, much more memory, et cetera, et cetera. Another aspect is the microsolar cells. Think about, you know, you're currently, you know, for example, a phone or actually watch that needs to be charged every 3 days. If I can implement vast amount of microsolar cells on the display of such watch, it will have to be charged probably once a month, once in 2 months, or even completely, you know, solar. So huge potential, you know, to implement this type of technologies in many domains. First one, of course, is storage, and virtually after that, any other type of, I would say, extension of capabilities for microchips in general.
Interesting. I agree. One last question. We're at 3 nanometer now. We've taped out a few chips. Do you think that creating a chip smaller than 3 nanometer is still feasible?
Well, we are working on it. The industry is working on it. And, you know, the big guys definitely, you know, the major, the leaders in this domain, IBM, Intel, and I'm sure others, you know, so definitely the industry is working on it. There's a lot of new, you know, technologies, you know, if it's gate all around FET and others. So there are currently, you know, work, there is, you know, there is a work that is done. Currently there are teams that are working on it as we speak. And I think definitely from our experience so far, definitely, you know, there will be challenges. The challenges are there, but, you know, we'll have to overcome them. How we will overcome them, this is still yet to be defined by a combination of the fabrication plants with the, you know, the physics, the physics guys, those that, you know, their job is to see how to create maybe a new type of substrate, you know, maybe the silicon, you know, maybe we'll switch further from just silicon to some type of a mixture with silicon with other type of elements, chemical elements, or completely a new element in general. But I do believe that we will go down furthermore, and after that, we just have to find some replacement.
Yeah, I agree. I think 3 nanometer is going to be one of the longest, most profitable nodes for TSMC anyway, because of the challenges we're going to see below that with gate-all-around and such. So I'm sure we will accomplish it, and I'm sure we will, you know, address the complexities, but I think it's going to be a little while longer. But Danny, it was very nice meeting you. Thank you again for your time, and I hope to have you on back the podcast sometime soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.